Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my infinite pleasure to welcome our many listeners, who not only in this country, but of course throughout the world, and also to welcome onto the show this week four clever, talented, experienced players of this game, who once more are going to pit their knowledge, their wit, their humour, their verbal dexterity and ingenuity on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition or deviation. And those four bright sparks are Paul Merton, Wendy Richard, Lisa Tarbuck and Clement Freud. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Janet Staplehurst, who's going to help me keep the score, and she'll blow the whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Drill Hall, which is just off Tottenham Court Road, actually, if you're interested, and not far from the sort of west end of London. It's sort of in the central part of London, and we have a fine London audience here. I'm allowed to repeat things.
No, I was just wondering, are we playing Just a Minute or Mornington Crescent?
No, Mornington Crescent, we leave that entirely to... I'm sorry, I haven't a clue. We have this lovely audience anyway, and we're going to cheer us on our way as we start the show with Wendy Richard, the subject... I don't know why they've chosen it for you. The Butchers. Tell us something about The Butchers in Just a Minute, starting now.
I get on very well indeed with the butchers in my corner shop. Whenever I go in there, they always know what I want and the fact that I will not order goods in kilos. I'm still pounds and ounces, and they get on with it, and there I get the exact amount required for whatever recipe I might be doing. I hasten to add, I'm a very good cook. I'm not much...
Please, the challenge.
Yeah, you're going to hate me, but there's been a lot of I'ms.
Yes, she was in I Am.
I Am.
Was that?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry.
Lisa, you had a correct challenge there. 37 seconds 37. On the butchers starting now.
My butchers is the best butchers in North London. He sells fantastic. That'll learn me, won't it?
Hesitation.
Yes. You got the butchers.
Okay.
And there are 31 seconds starting now.
There is a butcher near me who doesn't actually sell any meat. In fact, he's a greengrocer. He sells apples, pears, bananas, cherries, plums, all kinds of different produce.
Climate challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Because it's about butchers.
But he's a butcher, doesn't sell any meat. He calls himself a butcher, but he actually sells fruit.
No.
You don't... I didn't say it made sense, I just said it happened.
And this is the problem, isn't it? Because it doesn't make sense, but it's perfectly possible he could be a butcher who sells vegetables.
He's allergic to meat. He's allergic to meat.
It's perfectly possible. The audience say, Clement, you've got it right. Clement, 19 seconds, the butcher's starting now.
I know an undertaker called Mr. Butcher who sells cat food. It's fairly...
Well, that's exactly the same. I'm catching him on what he caught Paul on.
That's right, so you have the subject. Come on, Lisa, you have the subject. 13 seconds, the butchers starting now.
My butchers, peppery chipolatas.
Oh! Wendy, you've got in when you've got 11 seconds on the butchers starting now.
There used to be a lovely butcher's in Bloomsbury with the most wonderful tiles on the walls depicting cows and sheep and a lovely green hillside with blue sky.
Clement Challenge.
Represented her lovely.
There were two lovelies there, I'm afraid.
Oh, dear.
The lovely butcher and lovely scenery. What? Oh, you've got it with 1 second to go.
Oh.
Yes, that hasn't won many friends. But anyway, it's correct. That's the game. Clement, the butcher's 1 second starting now.
Butcher, baker, candlestick maker.
Well, at the end of that round, Clement Freud was again speaking of the whistle when gained that extra point for doing so with others in the round. He's increased his lead over the other three. And Clement Freud, would you take the next round? The subject is congestion. That's applicable to London. 60 seconds starting now.
A surfeit of almost anything could be called congestion. Too much mucus.
Paul Challenge.
Well, there was a hesitation there, but I think it's also deviation as well. A surfeit of anything can be called congestion. The ocean is a surfeit of water, but you wouldn't call that congestion.
No.
I think, speaking sort of colloquially and broadly and conversationally, Clement was not actually deviating, and he certainly didn't hesitate either. So he gets a point because he was interrupted.
Yes, he
there.
Did.
Let's not have anarchy, thank you.
So, Clement, you've got 55 seconds to continue on congestion, starting now.
Too much mucus in the nose, wax in the ears.
Wendy, Charlotte.
I just don't want to start talking about mucus. I'll be sorry.
Well, in just a minute, you can talk about whatever you want.
Yes, I know, but it's not very nice, is it?
Of course it's not very nice, but, I mean, there are all kinds of things in life which are not very nice, but we sometimes talk about them. And
yes, but just... not on the radio, not on Radio 4.
Anyway, well, Radio 3 is the mucus station, yeah. Surely.
He wasn't hesitating, deviating, or repeating anything. So, Clement, another point to you in 52 seconds. Congestion, starting now.
I was not going to mention excrement in the colon, but the word is now getting...
Some people say it's the best place for it. hesitation.
Yes, Paul, he did hesitate, and well, he might. Right. Paul, you have a correct challenge. You have the subject of congestion. My goodness, we've only been going for 19 seconds and we've still got 41 to go. Congestion's with you, starting now.
41 plus 19 makes 60. That'd be about right. I think London at this time of year is now experiencing a kind of thaw.
Lisa, challenge.
Visually, that was a hesitation.
vocally, we say as well. So, Lisa, you have the subject, and it's congestion, and there are 32 seconds available, starting now.
This week, there's been massive congestion around where I live, and I'm talking, of course, about cars. Mercury has been retrograde, so tempers have been frayed. And sitting in my motor, watching people do ridiculous things like dump rubbish out the window or gesticulate at someone who's trying to cut in, it's all part and parcel of London life, and congestion.
Clement, challenge.
Repetition of London.
Yeah, okay.
In that part of London where I live, you said, and then you mentioned London again. Yes, Clement, another point to you, and 13 seconds congestion starting now.
The resurrection of the word congestion is likely to be due to Ken Livingstone's legislation. He is the mayor of this town, unless there is a repeat of this programme.
Wendy, Richard, challenge.
It's a city, not a town.
The City of London's in the centre, and he's the mayor of
London.
The Greater London Council, so I think it's probably... He's not actually inaccurate saying that. Yeah. 2 seconds to go on congestion, starting now.
Congestion starting now.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Clement Freud, and with other points he gained in the round, he's got a strong lead. And Lisa, your turn to begin. Contact lenses. Can you tell us something about contact lenses in this game, starting now?
Contact lenses can be worn instead of spectacles to enhance one's appearance, and many a face has the weirdest of looks about it when they've taken their glasses off and suddenly start to wear said contact lenses. It seems odd. There are clubbers' contact lenses with cat's eyes or peepers of a crocodile or just the general colour of...
Wendy, challenge.
Too many yours.
Yes, yeah, that'll be right.
Yes, there were. Right. It's pretty sharp, but there we are. It's correct. Contact lenses, 41 seconds. Wendy, starting now.
I could never get on with contact lenses. I actually wear glasses. In fact, I went to have my eyes tested this morning, and I'm happy to say my sight has improved. So all the spectacles that I have at home, I've got to give away to a charity because I can't see through them.
Clement Freud, challenged.
There are a lot of eyes, I thought.
Yeah,
no,
eye.
But there's the eye
lenses.
And that eye. And then when I do it in Scottish, there's ock eye.
No, but you did say, I've got to do this, and I went there, and I did that. And though they let one or two go, three or four, I don't think we can, Wendy. Sorry about that. You're looking really as if you're very upset. I do apologise.
No, I'm ecstatic, Nicholas. Don't worry about me.
And the 25 seconds for you, Clement, on contact lenses, starting now.
The main market in contact lenses is via people who lose them. They go to opticians and say, I would like to buy a set of contact lenses, and then put them away and can't remember where it was. They place them. As a consequence, they return to the edifice which housed the...
Wendy, challenge.
I think he's struggling a bit.
He's really struggling.
No, he's doing very nicely.
But he's...
timing myself.
Have you a challenge within the rules of just a minute?
All right. He was starting to hesitate.
He was starting, but he didn't actually achieve it. Clement, an incorrect challenge. 3 seconds. Contact lenses starting now.
Buy two, get one free.
So Clement Freud is still speaking as a whistle went in each round and getting other points. He's increasing his lead all along the line. And Paul Merton, your turn to begin. The subject is now molehills. Tell us something about molehills in just a minute, starting now.
Well, it's capable of several meanings. There is the molehill that you find in your lawn, created by the mole who's been digging away, trying to get at the various grubs and all the other things that might be living in your bottom of your garden. Or there is indeed the actual molehill that you can turn into a mountain by worrying about something, pulling away, fretting, thinking that the problem is actually bigger than it actually is.
Lisa, challenge.
Two actuallys,
I'm afraid. So, Lisa, you got in with 40 seconds ago. Tell us something about molehills, starting now.
To get rid of moles, it's quite a good idea to start mowing the said meadow or lawn that you possess because they don't like the vibration. I heard that on a very interesting gardening programme on Radio 4. Another way to get rid of moles is wait till...
Clement, challenge.
Repetition for get rid of.
Get rid of. The subject is mole hills and not
is
get
it?
Rid of, yes. Oh. Right. Who challenged? It was you, Clement. Mole hills is with you. 26 seconds starting now.
Limericks tend not to work on just a minute, but I will try regardless. The delectably lovely Miss Coleshill once chanced to alight on a mole's hill. The inquisitive mole stuck his nose up her... Would you at least permit me to finish it?
I'm dying to know what the rhyme is for molehill.
Miss Coleshill's all right, but the mole's ill. Wendy told me that.
But before you finished and got that extra round of applause, we'll give him a bonus point for that anyway, because it was quite an achievement getting it out in the time. What was your challenge, Wendy?
Well, I was trying to prevent him from saying something. I was trying to bleep it out, but it was too late.
You were trying to save our... Well, unfortunately, but he's not talking now, so he's obviously pausing, so...
Well, I'll have a...
he finished his rhyme. He got a bonus point for that. Round of applause. And Wendy, you've got 10 seconds. Send us something about molehills starting now.
One occasion when we were out in the country, as I've said earlier on, I'm very short-sighted, and I was looking out the window. I thought, good heavens, they've got enormous molehills on their lawn, when one of them got out and hopped the bed.
So Wendy Richard was then speaking as the whistle went and gained that extra point. She's moved forward, but she's only in second place with Lisa Tarbuck and followed by Paul Merton. And Clement, it's your turn to begin. The subject is parrot fashion. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
Parrots have an extremely limited sense of fashion. They wear the same boring colours, beaks that are blue, eyes red. Wings yellow.
Yeah. Are you a challenge?
Hesitation,
yep. You're right, yes.
And they hesitate a lot.
And no. So, you have 49 seconds. Paul, tell us something about parrot fashion, starting now.
Well, I think it means that you learn something by rote, perhaps, but don't always understand the true substance you've actually tried to commit to memory. For example, the 7 times table would be very foolish for me to go through because there is an awful lot of repetition, but I do remember sitting in the class, chanting along with everybody else through this dreary rigmarole of these numbers, and I've never really been able to apply mathematics to any other portion of my life. I have an accountant that looks at the money I'm being paid. He lives in Brazil, but I'm sure there's a reason for that. I'm certain...
So when are you challenged?
Hesitation,
yes. 13 seconds. Tell us something about parrot fashion, Wendy, starting now.
Parrots are some of the most beautiful colours to behold. There's reds, yellows, greens, African greys. They're the best talkers. And then there are parakeets that are also fantastic colours. White.
So, Wendy, you were speaking as a whistle went and getting an extra point. You're creeping up on Clement Freud, which is, well, it's a very interesting situation, that. And just ahead of Lisa Tarbuck and Paul Merton. And, Wendy, it's your turn to begin. The subject is Oxford Street. I'm sure you know a lot about it. Tell us something about it in this game, starting now.
I'm fortunate enough to live in walking distance to Oxford Street. In fact, Selfridges is my corner shop. I'm often to be found in there wandering about or in a... No, I mustn't say that.
Lisa, challenge.
I'm helping her out, yes, but it's hesitation.
Yes, it was hesitation. Lisa, 49 seconds. Tell us something about Oxford Street starting now.
At Christmas time, Oxford Street is a dreadful place to be because you have to be aware of things like pickpotters. Oh. Throwing pots.
Well, it was deviation, I'm afraid.
Deviation, yes, from English as we understand it. 43 seconds on Oxford Street, starting now.
It's one of the most famous streets in the world, I suppose, full of shoe shops and record stores. There used to be a beautiful cinema in Oxford Street called the Academy, and I used to go there in my early teens to watch a season of Buster Keaton films, I think round about the years 1970 through to about 2 years later. And it was a wonderful opportunity to see these movies from a by...
Wendy, challenge.
We're having too many C's.
Yes, I used to go there to see the films,
oh, yes.
And now you were seeing the movies,
yes.
Right. Wendy, well, listen, 21 seconds. More on Oxford Street, please, starting now.
I think Oxford Street has more shoe shops than any other street in London. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to find footwear for children. There's plenty of the high-heeled...
Paul, challenge.
Hesitation.
There was
yes,
a hesitation, yes. 10 seconds. Oxford Street with you, Paul, starting now.
When I was a boy, I thought Oxford Circus meant just that. That you could go along and it'd be tumblers, acrobats, pretty little ponies trotting around, and who knows, a glamorous fire eater.
So Paul Merton was speaking as the whistle went and gained an extra point. He doesn't often trail in this show, but he was, but he's now catching up just beside Lisa Tarbuck, one behind Wendy Richard and one or two behind our leaders who still, Clement Freud and Lisa. It is your turn to begin. My favourite Beatle. Tell us, even if you haven't got one, tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
My favourite Beatle is a relative of the Scarab and is the guy called... Dung beetle. He excretes and collects all this poo into a great big ball and then eats it, and the female comes along and lays its egg in the middle, and then as they gestate from the heat of said manure, they grow up enjoying excrement and then move on and make... I didn't know I knew that.
So, Clement, you challenge first.
Hesitation.
Hesitation, yes, after what she had said, she hesitated. Clement, you've got 38 seconds, my favourite beetle, starting now.
I, too, am very fond of dung beetles. In South America, there is a beetle which, when it dies, is dried and pounded into cochineal, the colour being given solely because of the blood of the favourite beetle.
Wendy, challenge.
Too many elves.
Yes, there was. Correct. Wendy, 17 seconds. My favourite Beatle, starting now.
My favourite Beatle was John Lennon. I had the good fortune to work with the Beatles. In fact, it was my first film. Unfortunately, my role, the scene I was in, ended up on the cutting room floor. I was mortified. But in the days I was with the Beatles...
Oh, right. So Wendy Richard, speaking as the whistle went, is moving forward in second place. She's catching up on our leader, Clement Freud. She's just a bit of a head of Lisa Tarbuck. Paul Merton is third, and then Lisa Tarbuck. And Paul, your turn to begin. The subject is things you should never do in the back of a cab. We've heard some pretty fine things in this show already, but let's hear some more about the back of a cab, starting now.
Breeding pigs in the back of a cab is an extraordinarily difficult thing because, first of all, you have to keep it quiet from the driver, and he's bound to, after a while, turn around and say, excuse me, what are you doing with that syringe? And you have to point out that actually what you're trying to do is to bring forth little piglets from the porcine specimens in front of you. And, of course, he won't have it. He'll say to you, he says, listen, you can't use the back of my cab for such animal husbandry, and he'll kick you out. Other things you can't do in the back of a cab is to create a life-size picture of Clement Freud from Matchsticks. It's far too fiddly a thing to do. Other people have tried it, some with degree of success, but the whiskers generally try to... Oh.
So, Clement, your challenge?
Hesitation?
Yes, I think so there, yes. He was going so fast and rapid, he stumbled, and 21 seconds available. You tell us something about things you should never do in the back of a cab, starting now.
I think the most important thing you should never do in the back of a cab is attempt to speak to the driver. I just wish drivers would do the same regarding...
Wendy Chance.
So I was going to say driver, but it was drivers. I do beg your pardon.
No, he said drivers and driver, yes.
Yeah, well, sorry.
Quite. 12 seconds, Clement, and wrong challenge. Still with you, things you should never do in the back of a cab, starting now.
I think somersaults are quite difficult to perform. Although the arabesque might be possible driving down Oxford Street, which is my favourite...
Clement Boy again was speaking as the whistle went. With other points, he's increased his lead at the end of that round, and he also begins the next round because it's your turn, Clement, and the subject is the perfect alibi. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
My lord, I didn't do it. I was performing things in the back of a cab at the time.
Lisa Chung.
Hesitation. Finality,
yes. Waited for his laugh. Right, 53 seconds for you, Lisa. Perfect alibi, starting now.
Perfect alibi is basically I wasn't there and I can prove where I was. I happened to be sat at home with my wife, for example, would be a good one for Nicholas, perhaps, or anybody who's in fact married.
Poor challenge.
Not if he'd been murdering his wife.
True.
That would not be a good alibi. I was sitting at home with a wife. That's not a perfect alibi. Is it Nicholas?
No, it isn't. It isn't. But we don't. She hadn't established any circumstances under which that perfect alibi would.
Listen,
take
I think he's right.
You've let me off the hook. Thank you very much. Because you know, in just a minute, you can interpret the rules any way you like. So 41 seconds. The perfect alibi with you, Paul, starting now.
Well, presumably people have employed perfect alibis. We just don't know how perfect they were.
Clement Charles.
Sorry.
Right, because you thought it was the sum of the cup. Right, so Paul gets another point. He was interrupted. He carries on. The perfect alibi. 36 seconds starting now.
I'm sure there are people somewhere in...
Clement challenge.
Repetition of people.
Clement, 33 seconds on the perfect alibi starting now. Paul challenge.
A hesitation.
I think it was, yes. Yep. 31 seconds, the perfect alibi, Paul, starting now.
It's supposing that you can get away with the idea that somebody says, excuse me, where were you on the night of the 24th? Were you anywhere near Hampstead Heath? And you can point out quite clearly you were sunning yourself in Rio de Janeiro. If you can prove that, then you have, of course, the perfect alibi. But do we suppose that the perfect alibi is actually covering up a crime, or is it, in fact, that the individual... Is this probably the most boring speech?
Clement challenge.
In fact.
In fact, you did say...
Happened in that boring speech a number of times.
So, Clement, you cleverly got in with 3 seconds to go on the perfect alibi, starting now.
The thing to do is to talk to the policeman...
And I'm afraid I have to tell you that this is to be the last round. But let me give you the situation as we go into the final round. It's Lisa's Tarbuck in fourth place, but only just. She's a point or two behind Paul Merton,
only
who's
just.
Equal
there,
with Wendy
not,
Richard.
Really. I'm
and
losing.
They're all trailing Clement Freud, who's still in the lead. And Wendy, it's your turn to begin. So will you take the last round, which is courting? Tell us something about courting in this game, starting now.
Courting seems to be very rarely done these days. Young couples go rushing into relationships, whereas they should have a bit of courting first, because it can be quite fun, you know, when you're courting and you get taken out to the theatre and to the cinema and you're bought chocolates and perfume and diamond rings and all sorts of things like that. That is what courting is all about. Also, I feel I am courting disaster any second now. I'm just hoping someone is going to buzz me, Lisa.
So, Lisa, your friend sitting beside you, challenge first.
Yeah, it
Lisa.
Was a certain look in the eye there. And
panic.
A cat's paw under the door, wasn't it? Help me.
Help
me.
So,
I mean here, help me.
No actual challenge, but Wendy's quite prepared to sacrifice the subject. I mean, have you got a challenge?
Oh, we're suddenly being strict now, are we?
I have to be fair. I always am fair to us. So have you got a challenge when the rules
and? There was a lot of ands.
Yeah, a lot of ands, right. 27 seconds courting with you, Lisa, starting now.
Courting is the motion that you make whilst playing tennis and moving around the court.
Paul Challenge.
No, this is deviation. There's no such term in tennis as courting. You don't. It's nonsense. It's absolute rubbish. It's balderdash, in fact. Balderdash.
You've created that in the spur of the moment and tried to bluff your way through it.
No, I think she's right because you have fielding on a cricket field, don't you?
Yeah.
And a football field. So you play tennis on a court, so you have courting. Chalisa's quite right. Because it's where you rush round the court, you see.
So on a football pitch, you have pitching. No.
Where? But you do.
Where?
You only have courting.
Round the pitch.
You only have courting on a when you're playing tennis when two lovers are together and they're not really playing the game seriously.
What are you talking about?
And they stop serving, they go behind the bushes there together, and they do. She created that word. Paul is right. You don't have courting in tennis. And
I'm going to look that up, photocopy it, and send you both that.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And 20 seconds, Paul, on courting starting now.
You know, it is strange that now we don't have that magical time when a couple can look in each other's eyes and say, I wonder how much money you're really worth. And you can judge that by the quality of the presents you get. In diamond rings is one thing, but a tractor, that would show...
So Paul Merton was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. When others in the round, he has leapt forward. But I'll give you the final situation. Lisa Tarbuck finished in a magnificent fourth place. She was... gave her usual good value with great charm and panache. Wendy Richard, who always gives good value... you finished in a very strong third place... Paul Merton, who usually does magnificently, did very well because he's in a beautiful second place. But that's all right, that's enough. And out in the lead, in a very strong lead, was Clement Freud. We say, Clement, you're the winner this week. It only remains for me to say thank you to these four delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Lisa Tarbuck, Wendy Richard and Clement Freud. I also thank Janet Staplehurst, who has helped me keep the score. She's blown her whistle so delicately. And we also thank our producer-director, Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created the game, and we're very grateful to this lovely, warm, spontaneous audience here in the Drill Hall in the centre of London, who have cheered us on our way magnificently. Thank you from me, Nicholas Parsons, from our panel and from the audience as well. Thank you. Goodbye, and tune in the next time we play Just a Minute. Yay!